My LinkedIn is unhinged, but people follow it because it sounds like me, because I am unhinged. And like,
that's why I reached out to you.
Exactly.
It worked.
Welcome to Talking to the Lab with Chris Savage, the show that's serving up the loudest takes on building businesses, top-notch products, and unforgettable brands. Today, I'm here with Bridget Putker, a copywriter and marketer who's been in the game for over a decade, working for ad agencies and startups, and now running her own business. And I'm excited to dive into that journey with you. But first, this show is called Talking Too Loud because when I get excited about something, I cannot control the volume of my voice. This is a real thing. Happens to me all the time. I'm constantly getting shushed. And so we like to start our show by asking what's got our guest talking too loud, what's got Sylvie talking too loud. Sylvie, what's going on in your world? What's got you talking too loud?
Oh, boy. What has got me talking too loud today? You know, I was going to say one thing, and then I was like, that's kind of a downer. What has me talking
no
too loud?
No downers here today.
No
Sylvie.
Downers.
I know you like downers, but not right now.
I feel like I'm only talking too loud about bad things. I'm shouting angrily at the TV, at the news.
Yeah.
But a good thing, I'm going on a little vacation soon.
Nice.
So getting excited about being in some sun in Mexico and just being in the ocean in a pool. That's my dream right now. That's my dream.
I'm going to be talking too loud about your vacation. I'm living through you. Similarly, I feel like besides the news of it all, I feel like that's also what I'm talking too loud about right now. But it's also because it's like, it's just too much content. I can't keep it in my body. It needs to like an outlet. It needs to go somewhere.
100%.
But I said this week to somebody that I feel like most of my clients are in California for whatever reason. Like, and I'm like, how's the sun? How's the weather over there? Like, I talk more about the weather since COVID and being remote than I ever did in my entire career. But I'm also in Chicago. So we have the sun today. So I'm like, wow, we have the sun today. I'm going to go on 17 walks. Like, that's just so...
You have to live vicariously, though, through everybody else.
Yeah, and you have to take advantage when you do have the sun and can, like, go outside. So Chris, I'm also always being told to shut up or shush or whatever.
Good. Well, I'm glad we're not alone. And, you know, for me, I actually just was on vacation in Puerto Rico, and it was very sunny and very warm and very lovely. And I was actually shushed by my wife a few times because I was too excited at these dinners.
What's your thought on going to a family restaurant, okay, and another patron shushes you or your family?
Deal
breaker?
That's rough? I think that is a deal breaker if it's coming from somewhere else.
Right?
Yeah, I kind of just look at them and I'm like, it doesn't sound like you're having any fun over there.
So. Yeah.
I think especially
have
if it's
more fun.
Well, especially if it's a family restaurant, which I assume by that you're defining this, like people are bringing their kids and they're
loud.
Yeah, then everyone knows what they're signing up for. I think it's one thing if you signed up for like some like 5-star thing and it's like, you know, you could hear a pin drop and there's like the little like moody music going. Yeah, okay, fine.
Yeah, but we're like, not at like, you know, a Michelin star. Okay, that happened recently.
We're at a Chili's,
to a friend.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're at a Chili's.
Let's set the scene.
We're at a Chili's in Times Square. Actually, I think that's a Fridays it's there.
Chips and salsa. I definitely get too loud about chips and salsa. Unlimited. So, yeah.
Yes. Who doesn't?
Well, Chili's, yes, unlimited. Blooming onion. We're not going to get into it. but what we are going to get into is let's talk about starting your own agency. So I know you did that, Bridget. That was a big leap. Like, what inspired that decision? And what's been the most unexpected part of that journey so far?
Yeah. I feel like starting in an agency role, like right out of college, kind of opened my eyes to what was possible right away. It was kind of like, oh, I could do this, like a smaller agency. We have our own clients. It's kind of cool. We're coming up with all these concepts. And I studied advertising. So I've always swayed a little bit more on the creative side versus like, I think marketing was in the business school and advertising was in the media school, technically. Mm. So even just having that delineation was interesting. And then I like wandered into tech and I stayed for a while. I kind of went around different, I don't know, everybody does like the year and a half at different companies and it's just difficult. Like small B2B startups, it's a hard landscape to be in. The majority of my career has been marketing to marketers, which I love. But I kind of just got to the point where, like, lay off, work at a company that, like, maybe it wasn't necessarily for me. I'm fighting with the CEO about t-shirt colors and I don't really care about that. And then, like, you know, your salary gets cut at some point and I'm just like, this matrix is not working for me anymore. And I very strategically, like, started at G2 in content, moved to big time and worked in, like, paid side. So I tried to, like, get every piece of what a B2B marketing team is, because I had aspirations to be a CMO. And then when I was in a director level and I saw that the CMO was in 100 meetings a week and responsible for all these numbers, and I was like, nope, that's not for me. Just keep me on the creative side. Like, I just want to be the ideas girl and then execute that stuff. Like, that's the way that my brain works. And I just felt like the system was just kind of, like, not for me anymore. And I was like, I can always go back to being on an internal team. But I decided to give it a go in the agency side. I candidly had a few of my friends that feel like about a year ago, there was this mass kind of exodus between people being laid off and then deciding not to go back into full-time roles, just being like, okay, I'm just going to freelance. But it's been just over a year now. And I am, like, truly now building what I'm calling a content collective agency. I feel like has a hierarchy, and also, like, everybody in B2B is, like, kind of allergic to what an agency is because it's very deliverables focused. And I want to be more like, we're your partner. We, like, act as your internal team, but collective meaning I'm not in charge. Like, you have three senior marketers on this project. And, like, we've all built these content programs before at different companies. And we all have different sways of, like, somebody's in brand, somebody's editorial, somebody's in growth. So, like, we're all working on the same project so we can move all of those buckets forward.
So you're saying, like, this collective now is not, like, it's like a group of people who you like working with each other, but you're all freelancers and do different things. So you might go into a company and say, hey, like, I can come in here and help you with this creative side. And I know this person is really good at doing, like, brand ad stuff. I know this other person. And they're like, yeah, I think I need the creative and the brand ad stuff, but I don't need that other thing. And so, because it's not just an agency, it's individuals. But individuals who know that they can work well together. Is that the idea?
Yeah. And I think that, honestly, like, one of the things that I found as a freelancer is, like, do you know somebody that does this? Do you know somebody, like, the network that we've created too? Like, I think, I don't know how to explain this any better than, like, freelancers in general, I don't think see other freelancers as competition. It's community. And, like, if I have enough clients and I'm good for the month, I'm also, like, working very month to month or week to week, even sometimes, like, being able to recommend somebody else in my network, like, that comes around. It kind of is like a nice karma. It's a good, like, feel good. But also, like, we all like working together. And I think that's the biggest thing that I felt solo was I just miss working with my friends. And now I get to pick who I want to work with, which is even better. So, yeah, I'm, like, you know, pulling all my friends into this, like, let's, like, build something together and we can still have these projects on the side that, to your point, Chris, like, somebody comes to me for a brand project and they just want a brand project, more than happy to service them. But I think that it just comes down to, like, just having different things, different special projects that I'm excited to work on so that I don't have to work on 10 different things a month. You know, it's like, how do I scale down to 3 or 4?
That's awesome. You said a lot in that intro, and I also want to go, no, that's great. But there's actually a lot of stuff I want to go back and dig into. So one of the things you said is you worked for a bunch of, like, small B2B companies and that was challenging. And now I know you help a lot of those companies too, but what was the challenge? Like, what makes that so hard?
Yeah. B2B companies are their own animal. What I saw internally and what I'm still seeing externally is that companies kind of hire these marketing teams and then each person on the team owns, like, a channel of, like, you have demand gen and they're owning like this and content owns this and social, like, instead of teams working together, everybody's running a different direction and there's no, like, nucleus at all. It's just kind of like month to month. We got to get the numbers. We have to make sure that we have the leads in and, like, all these things. And I'm not saying that things shouldn't be numbers driven. But I think that teams need to work together more on having
the collaboration piece.
Yeah. And, like,
you're basically saying or at least what I think I hear you saying in there, and tell me if this is right, is, like, people will be sitting next to each other working in the same department, but with goals that are so separate
Totally.
That like obvious things that should be done to collaborate or yep. done together don't happen.
Yep.
And then it actually feels very lonely, but also it's harder to get the combination effect of like, you see the brand campaign and you see a demand gen ad and you go to an event and yep. you try the product and they're all feel, instead of feeling unified, they can feel separate because people are so siloed.
Yeah. I feel like an integrated marketing campaign is like such an old traditional way to say it, but like, mm-hmm. where did these larger like brand campaigns go that like, we can fit all the channels into, and like the content that's going into those channels like is all speaking the same message, or like, okay, yeah. we have this product launch coming up. Like, how do we start talking about that now so that people understand that that's what this company does? And I think it's a symptom of, in my opinion, like being like so product marketing focused, like marketing swings to all these different things so often. And it's almost always product marketing and demand gen. And I really see this like culmination of like, well, the in-between of that is content, and content runs all of that. So how does the content team fit into all of those things so that you can get the whole team together, galvanized, get people in the boat? I think that's another thing that B2B teams don't do very well, is like listen to other people and their ideas and tap into customer success and tap into sales and tap into all these other. We don't have to listen to them and every single thing that they're saying of like, I need a one pager. Well,
but maybe
do
listening
you?
A little is a good idea.
Yeah. Because yeah. when they see those ideas out there, they're like, oh, I understand. Like, I understand what marketing is and why we have this team now. Not that the marketers get to goof off in their meetings and get to take Fridays off when the salespeople are going to the office every day. You know, it's just like, there's always been this thing, and I'm so bullish on like, I'm trying to cozy up to everybody in the company because it's so much easier for me to do marketing, specifically content marketing, the more people that I have in the boat.
Yeah, I hear you completely. And I feel like it's like, also you're getting it closer to the customer if you're talking to everybody, because you're going to get different perspectives on what the customer actually cares about.
Yeah, it's interesting. Don't you think marketing is probably the furthest away from the customer, but we're the ones that are supposed to talk to them?
I think without work, yes. Like, I think that's right. Like, you're guessing what the customer is going to think, but like, it's also, that's where you can run into, I feel like, major disconnects where people don't even value marketing in some organizations. I feel like that's a thing that happens where someone will make a product, it starts working. Like, and by work, I mean, small number of customers find it, word of mouth might kick in. And then they're like, well, I'm not really doing any marketing. And it's like, no, actually, you probably are. There's like a lot happening in like the pages of people touching your product and the experiences they're having. That is like a brand experience in marketing. And then they can't figure out how to like translate that into a team, a department, and goals and stuff. So yeah, I agree. I think it takes more proactive work. And I'm a big believer that it also takes not just like, I've talked about this ad nauseum on the show, but I think it's like a really good thing to talk about, is like, the quantitative stuff is great, but you have to get the qualitative. Like, you have to actually do the focus groups and like send it to people you trust who have great taste. They're like, do you like this thing? Is it good? And they're like, I love it, or I hate it, or whatever. And it's like, guess what? That actually matters. And it matters even more when you're farther from the customer. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to go into something you said in there about like the different teams not communicating and working together, or even like who's driving. And one thing I've been thinking about a lot is like, you don't always know when something's going to resonate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, I'll see something resonate much more than we're expecting, but it might be like a product thing, or it might be a brand thing, or it might be a content thing. And then it's like, how much should you change the other functions when you see something that really resonates? I don't know. I find that something that's like pretty natural and easy to do when you have like a small team and they know trust each other, like your collective of people who like really trust each other, and is much harder when people have separate goals and plans and the company's bigger.
Yeah. And I think that's the key, right? Is like, from the marketing leadership side and even above, like, how do you make sure that your teams are set up to collaborate together to have those moments? I think, again, one of the things that I saw internally was, we're responsible for so many things, and so much of it is just output and not outcome based, that it's just like, I don't care how many social posts go out this week if they don't get any likes on them. Like, who cares that it did it? You know what I mean? we don't have time to think anymore as marketers. We're just do. And I'm all for doing, because I think so much of it too has been like, it's either all strategy or all execution. And I'm like, what's in the middle? Like, where is there like some middle ground? But I agree with you. Like, so many people think marketing and like the science, like it's art and science, right? And the science is like the numbers, but like science is actually in the experimentation and being able to say, we don't know what's going to work. Honestly, the things that we put together the quickest and just got out there is probably the thing that is going to work the best, instead of like having 10 cooks in the kitchen and everybody being involved. And I think there's a time and a place for both of those things, but I don't know how much you change your whole strategy because something worked, because you don't know what piece of that worked. Did that work because that specific product feature was really popular? How do we just double down on that campaign? And to your point, how do we have enough of a customer relationship, whether that's a customer advisory board that the marketing team can tap into or whatever, to say like, why did this work? Like, we think we're really smart as marketers. And I would say that we are, to a point. But we don't know everything, and we don't even know why some things work sometimes. We can number it all the way to hell, but sometimes the answer is not in the number either, you know?
I'm wondering about, you mentioned outcomes versus outputs, and like, what's an example of like you working with a client and they have a really clear outcome, or you're trying to help them to like distill down an outcome? What's an example of a good one? What's an example of a bad one? Like, outputs are very, they feel very tangible. They feel very like, yep, I'm going to make this social post. I'm going to write this, you know, tweet, et cetera.
Yeah.
But the outcome has like a much deeper intention.
Yeah. My brain, and I started my SaaS career again in content and more specifically SEO at G2. So I kind of always see things through that lens of like, we can make bets based on keyword volume and all these things, but some of it is like, we're making bets based on customer stuff or what we think we should write just because we have this other piece or whatever. But I would say there that the outcome is like, we need traffic to go up, right? That doesn't take a month. It doesn't take 3 months. It's like a consistent battle. Yes, the output that you need to measure is how many pieces have we updated? How many pieces are net new? So like, people get so stuck on the output because I think that teams are measuring productivity that way instead of looking at what's the outcome that we're all going after, and do we have enough trust from the leadership team, leeway, time to say, we're going to really run in this direction. And following the marketing trends is also hard because it pulls teams off those paths too, right? It's like you're losing people off the boat to go run down these other things, that ChatGPT search, for example. Like, is it going to eat Google? Probably not. Maybe some point, maybe we should test a little bit of that stuff. And like, I'm not saying abandon it, but if it's 2% of search traffic, I don't want to spend 85% of my day there, you know?
How do you know which trends to pay attention to?
Yeah, you trust yourself and you trust what you've seen, but you also I think that that's one of the best parts about having a personal brand is like me being able to say out loud, like what's working for people, or I can try the silly things on my stuff and see if that's going to work. And candidly, like on social specifically, brand pages is a whole other beast, but I think this like founder-led motion is really strong if people are doing it correctly and they're not getting AI to write every single one of their posts and all this, you know, it's like,
yeah, they have a personality.
Yeah. The whole point is that it sounds like you and it's your point of view.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I obviously agree with that. And also I agree with the like testing piece there. It's like so much easier. It feels, I think for everybody, like the weight of testing on a personal brand versus a company brand is completely different.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting to hear you talk about outcomes. One of our values at Wistia is focus on outcomes. And
yeah, it's great.
When we established that value, is because we had people who were too focused in decisions on the outputs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, actually, no, I'm not even, we're not prescribing what input should be done to get the outcome.
Yeah.
And you actually should have freedom and flexibility to change that a lot. But the outcome, the result that is like, we think is possible based on what we've seen. And it's funny, like just to stay on the personal brand example, we had some breakthroughs on my LinkedIn last year, and we're I was posting maybe like once a day, like text posts, and then like doing a newsletter once a month. And it was like growing and stuff. And then started posting one short video a day, like a vertical video.
Yeah.
And in the first 2 weeks of that, one of them really took off. I'm like, oh, maybe we should do two short videos a day, just taking clips from the podcast or things. And that started to take off, and then do three. And we basically what ended up happening is like the input shifted. So it was a text post and it turned into the short vertical video as the input that we think is the best job of driving the outcome. And it could shift again, but that's currently the one that is like the most important, the most valuable. And I just say that because I think it's easy sometimes for people to miss like evaluating the input versus the output.
Yeah.
Where it's like you control the input and you think it's going to do something.
Yeah.
And it's just, did it actually get the result? And so, yeah, it's just interesting because it like resonates with me, like the personal brand testing stuff, trying to get people to actually look at outcomes. And it's just so easy not to. I feel like it's too easy to report.
Because it's right in front of you, right? Yeah. And those are the things that, like, as a brand marketer, especially, like, coming up with outcomes that I'm going to measure, like, word of mouth or dark social, which is just brand marketing. Like, why are we making things up these days? I don't understand.
Was it fun to call dark social? That's like when people are in Slack or text or Signal or WhatsApp. That's not messaging. That's dark social.
The last CEO that I worked for, she would say all the time, she's like, I want you to be on a playground and not in a pressure cooker. And she just, it took off so much of like, oh, like I don't have these goals where I have to publish 10 blogs a month and I have to do this and I have to do that. Like she wants me to look at the larger picture and say, we need to get as many signups in before the Christmas season. It was a gifting platform as possible. Whatever we need to do to get there, have fun while you're doing it. I think in B2B, we have this opportunity that not a lot of teams take, and that, and I hate to be the one that says B2B is boring, but like people say that because it's true, right? And I'm like, we have an opportunity, that means that there's an opportunity to be fun on the other side of it and stand out that way.
Yep.
And people don't, when marketing teams are having fun, you can tell in their marketing that they get along, and like, what's better than that? There's no better magic to put into your content than that, you know?
Totally. It's also like to the point you're saying before, like it's harder to get traffic to your site. Like it's harder, like the SEO stuff is harder. There's more AI answers for everything.
Yeah.
There's the LLM stuff, still small fraction of searches, but growing rapidly. There's algorithm changes more often, harder to get traffic off of social.
Yep.
And so it does mean that like the traffic you're getting is, I think, shifting. It's going further down funnel, right? Like people are doing more. They go to G2. Like G2 didn't used to exist. Now it exists. Yep. So if you're going to buy a product, you're going to go there and check the reviews, which means before you might have like 10 years ago, you might have talked to a sales rep and be like, do you have other customers I can talk to? Maybe feel comfortable buying this thing. It's like, well, now you just go to G2 and like probably feel pretty comfortable or not in the first place. Not even talk to the company that has the bad reviews.
And I think that that leaves even more space for your marketing team to understand all these other channels that like they can build content in, right? That it doesn't have to be like, oh, we own our G2 profile and we just like slap those badges on our website. Like, what can you actually do with that? That's like different and fun. And I think that more and more people, as more and more buyers, like you said, everything is moving down the funnel, but that means that people are like on this like hunter gatherer mission. And it's like, it's our job to leave the pieces there for them to understand what the company is. So it leaves us more room to do that. It leaves us more room on the website. Somebody in one of the Slack channels I'm in had said like, hey,
your dark social,
my dark social. Yes. Yeah. Was like, hey, if you got a cold email from somebody that like you were actually interested in with a product that they were selling, would you respond to that or would you go to the company's website first? And everybody in that channel said, I'd go to the website, I'd go to G2, I'd go to LinkedIn and all of those things before even responding to the salesperson. So somebody in demand gen is saying, oh, the outreach emails that we're sending are not working. And it's like, well, but people are doing their own research. It's just that the motions are shifting. It's not that anything is dead. Yeah. I'm so sick of that. Like, we're going to need outreach. We need BDRs. It's the hardest job. Like, I get the whole AI thing. I understand all of that stuff. But like, candidly, things are dead because some LinkedIn guru said somewhere that this was the next big thing. So then
that's a controversial thing they can say that's going to get
that.
To be
and then it gets flooded in that space. So like now everybody's offering a gift card for a meeting. So that's not going to work anymore. So then we go back to like, again, it's just like a pendulum. That's like, it's not actually that the channels are dead. It's that we're overcrowding the channels when everybody's listening to the same people about what to do.
And you're asking for a world that doesn't exist anymore. Right. Like you're asking for the world of perfect tracking that we
even
have.
2018 tech does not exist anymore.
Exactly. And I think that there's a lot of people who got into these positions of like running marketing, running these parts of marketing that came up during that moment where it's like, well, I knew every dollar exactly what I got from it. And now you don't. And so trust matters again.
Yep.
And brand matters. And I agree with you 100%. I think there's like the boring companies, the ones that haven't figured out how to tell a story. Like you don't have to be boring. And in a boring market, that's often one of the most exciting markets to get into if you could tell a compelling creative story because you will stand out so dramatically.
Yep.
But to do that, you have to put messages out into the world. You can't track exactly how people are responding. You have to trust that is making people feel like it's funny to think about. It's like trust is making people feel something, and then literally you've saved a little space in their brain. So when they think about this topic, this little space in their brain is like, boop, oh, Wistia. Oh, yeah, video Wistia. And like that's what you're going for, which is a funny thing to say, but that's like what it is. And I think that feels so, so different. And so right now there's still gobs and gobs of opportunity there because most people haven't jumped on this bandwagon yet.
I also think that this lends itself to like the idea that marketing teams don't have to be huge. Like you really, and I say this because most of my clients are early stage startups, or they're like Series C startups that have seen their content start to decline. And they understand that they need to like invest in brand marketing to like really get somewhere. Because I literally had a CEO last week say, well, you could take our logo off and swap it with our competitors and nobody would know. And I'm like, it's good that you see that and understand that because that's exactly what like we're trying to do. Yeah. A lot of people won't say that. Right. But
nobody has ever put it like that. That's actually a really interesting.
I know
way
when he said
be,
that, I was like, yeah, you're right. Even like the colors are all similar and like the way that you're positioning this is similar. And and yes, the things that you if you're a video conferencing software, right, like an events platform, they all have the same features. Everybody does the same thing because that's what the customers asked for. So if you have like comparable products, the only thing that's going to stand different is the brand, like how you position that and what you sound like. And I think that that's another thing that I fell in love with copywriting early because I love design. I didn't go to design school. I wish that I had. I started at school in engineering, which is a whole other story. My parents are very proud of me for switching to advertising. I'm doing okay, mom and dad. It's fine. But I always say like I have design eyes, but I don't have design hands. Like it would take me forever. Like great with the Canva template. Give me that all day long. But like creating something from scratch, I can't do. But words, I am so big on this. Like you have to have a point of view. That's the only way your content is going to stand out. And also like speak like we're speaking. Speak how normal people speak. Like my LinkedIn is unhinged, but people follow it because it sounds like me, because I am unhinged. And like,
that's why I reached out to you.
Exactly.
It worked.
But it gets me clients too, which like, I would so much rather be posting memes, like silly things like that, and show you my personality and the way that my brain works instead of here's three things I learned in marketing this week. Like there's 100 people saying that. I don't need to be one of them.
Let's go deeper here. So you're unhinged. And which I love.
Proudly unhinged.
But so many people are afraid of like, quote, hurting their brand or like talking too real or swearing or whatever, like not being exactly on message. But you found a path towards like growing your audience by actually being yourself. Did you start like this? Is this how it just like happened? Or like what advice do you give to somebody who's like they buy into what we're talking about? They're like, yes. This company should do founder-led marketing, or we should really invest more in brand, or we should be willing to be more creative, do different things, but they can't. Yeah. What would you tell them?
Yeah, I think that you said the keyword there, which is audience. Everybody thinks about the posting and how much you should post and what you should be saying. I'm so much more focused on who I'm saying it to. And that is why it resonates, I feel like. I was really a big proponent of marketing Twitter back in that like 2018, 2019. Like that was a really good space for the B2B marketing community. And I just met so many people. I started a podcast with somebody that I met on the internet. We didn't even meet until we finished season one. She worked at Drift. I was at G2. We were both just like, let's start a podcast, like, because yeah. nobody's saying these things out loud. And I think that was a big catalyst for me, because promoting that, first of all, the only reason I started the podcast was because I didn't have podcast experience, and in content marketing in that time, that was the new thing. And I was like, I'm just going to do it myself so that I can put this on my resume.
Yeah.
And I've frankly always been somebody that said the quiet part out loud, because I'm just confident and I have a point of view, and I'm maybe say too much, or maybe sometimes don't know exactly what I'm talking about. But most of the time, if I'm saying it out loud, I've done my research and I've had the experience myself. And I feel like it was just so anyway, I started on Twitter, which was a little bit more of a safe space to be unhinged, candidly. And then Elon bought Twitter and I was like, this is broken now. I can't use this.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like at that point, he wasn't, you know, enemy number one. It was just like, I can't use this. I'm not seeing my friends' tweets. I'm seeing the same tweets over and over again. Like, I don't want to be here. I don't know how you guys feel, but being in tech, I'm like, if something doesn't work, it like pisses me off to no end. I'm like, why does this not work? Why does this interface suck? Whatever. Mm-hmm. So I just took my Twitter tact over to LinkedIn, and it started to translate. I started posting originally when I was at G2. Our content team was 30 people. And that was another channel for us to get our content out there. It was like we were responsible for all the things that we were writing, getting backlinks to them, getting them like whatever. So we were, you know, Twitter, when Twitter chats was a big thing, and just like trying to start building the team brand in general. And then I just, you know, when I worked at different companies, it wasn't always like on my brain to always be posting. I never had a company say don't post. But I did feel sometimes that I was like, I can't say certain things. So working for myself is a lot better because I can say whatever I want. And if it keeps me from getting clients, then those are not clients that I want to work with anyway. But going back to just like the audience is really what I'm focused on. And that's my outcome. My outcome is, am I connecting with the people? And you'll see me and like, I don't post something and then like not engage. Like I'm in the comments. Like that's the reason that I post content, is so to actually have conversations with people. And I guess my advice would be like, who do you want to speak to? Why do you want to be posting? What do you feel like is your point of view that you can speak to? I don't really post much about marketing, honestly. I post more about the corporate structure, being outside of the corporate structure, different things like that. All the memes that I post are like, this could have been an email, stupid shit like that, because it just resonates with more people, you know? But yeah, I feel like I've found this niche now in this like quasi, I always say like I stepped outside the matrix. And I feel like I'm just like on the line of that, of like, I have one foot into corporate because all my clients are B2B startups. But I'm also like in the entrepreneur land too. So it's an interesting like place to be.
And I imagine that like you're meeting a lot of your clients through LinkedIn, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's either referrals, which I just have a really good network of people either that I've worked with like directly that are recommending me, or clients that I've worked with that recommend me, or LinkedIn. I've had so many people similar to Sylvie just like reach out and say, hey, can you teach our team how to do this? And I'm like, maybe.
Well, I just go back to the point of like, you know, we're talking about brands feeling comfortable taking a risk. Like you've built your own company. You're taking these risks all the time. You're having legit fun with it. Like if you go look at your LinkedIn profile, it's clear. Like you're having fun. You're making jokes. And it turns out that actually works. And it's not super surprising if you remove the platform and the posts.
Yeah.
Like I like to think about it as like if you sat down with a room with somebody and you're just really comfortable and confident and you told them some jokes that were related to work and you showed off your expertise, they'd be like, I like this person. I want to work with them. And I think it's like the hard thing that people have is translating that. You might totally do this in person. Your best person might do this all the time. You're like, you know it, but actually what it looks like online is just, it looks like actually the same thing of a person making the jokes, but it feels funnier or something because you can like read it and it stays up. And I don't know. I share that because just giving people more permission to take those risks and be themselves is really what we're talking about.
And I think it's too, the juxtaposition of seeing my things in the feed versus like some of the other, like, I think that that helps me too, is like, many people be like, this is a breath of fresh air. But to your point, like, it's not different than how I am sitting in a room. Like, yes, I think I'm hilarious, but also it's like a coping it's a coping mechanism too, right? Of like, I'm going through this trauma, so I'm going to make a joke about it. And it's a way of connecting with people through humor that it's difficult. Like, it's not for everybody. So I find it difficult when companies are like, can you teach us how to do this? And I'm like, well, what do you sound like? Who are you in the room? And then I can teach you how to be more confident in that.
Yeah.
But I can't teach you how to be me because I can't teach I'm not teaching myself how to do that. I'm just doing
it. Also, that's not going to serve.
Exactly.
That's not going to serve them. Period.
Yeah. It's not going to get the outcome that you want. Yeah. Exactly. Right.
It's very interesting. I find that I make jokes with people all the time in person and on calls. And I find I have trouble figuring out how to get that voice into my like online presence.
Yeah.
And
that's what helps being a copywriter.
Well, yeah. No, it's just interesting because it's like, I think it's a very real struggle. Like, I certainly have it. And like, some of the content that I've posted that's done the best was funny. And I thought it was funny. And it just took so much more work for me to figure out how to like, translate it to actually show up in a way where it stood on its own.
I think for me, and again, advice that I would give somebody that like wants to be out there more, if I don't have something to say, I'm not like forcing myself to. And I think, Chris, it's great. Like, so much of the content game on LinkedIn is like being disciplined about being like, we're doing 3 posts a day. This works. Like, it does work that way. But it doesn't mean that you have to do it that way either. Like, I posted more recently, but like 1 or 2 times a week. And the reason that it works is because I'm fired up and I'm saying something that I actually have a thought in my head that I need to get out or whatever. But you'll see me like flying around different people's comments sections, because I think that's a really strong way too to build your brand, is to like show up in these other places. And if you're not comfortable yet posting for yourself, start commenting on things and not saying, thanks for posting, or I agree with this. Like, say what you feel is correct. And when people read things in your voice, again, it like just gets that point of view across. And then people are like, I like what this person is saying. I'm going to like follow their stuff, you know?
Totally. I think it's also interesting because on LinkedIn, everything's attached to a real name and person.
Yeah.
And so like,
I never thought about that.
Sylvie and I were just talking about this before you got on the call, because we had some clips and we were seeing people say like wild ass stuff, and the wild stuff is like on platforms where it's not their name.
Yeah.
Like,
there's no picture,
or it's like it's hidden enough. Yeah. Which is just also interesting, because I think it inherently makes it more people feel like they need to be buttoned up, when actually what we really want is like authenticity. Like, that's what you're talking about. It's like putting yourself out there and saying what you actually believe. And then, the fact that it does have your name attached to it is a good thing, because it's like showing people like, I have this thought, I have this idea, I have this opinion.
Yeah.
I care deeply about it. And then suddenly now they can resonate with you. But also, like, I feel like it's slightly safer because of the fact that everyone's like actual name is on everything.
Yeah. And the caveat here is that we're in B2B SaaS, where everything's made up and the points don't matter. And we're like champions for being weirdos and trying new things. Mm-hmm. And whereas one of my clients is pre-seed like law software, and it's like very much a point solution. So it's even difficult to come up with content around like, we're solving one thing. And like, how am I supposed to say that 700 ways? But I went to an event for them, and it kind of dawned on me that like, lawyers are people too. Like, maybe not my favorite people. Don't love to be at a conference with 500 lawyers coming up to our booth. But we built this brand around like a mascot. Our mascot is this dog. It's a search platform, so it's like a pointer dog, whatever. Like, there was a whole story behind it. And people loved our swag. People loved that we were doing something different than what was in that space. But even looking at LinkedIn, I'm like, okay, like, we can build a whole like content story around this dog. But if I want the founder to start posting, like, or those lawyers, like, it's not even if they can be themselves. because I'm, again, there are people and like seeing them at this event, like, look, I've been to a lot of SKOs that get crazy, but this lawyer convention was like something completely different. I was like, I need to go back to my room. Like, I need to get out of here. I don't belong here. But it showed me that, like, yes, inside their jobs, they are these buttoned up. And again, like in that corporate space, like they're not going to be posting crazy shit on LinkedIn because they're trying to get hired at the next law firm and the next law firm. And they actually look at that stuff. So like, I know that we are very lucky to be in this like loosey goosey space. But I guess my advice to be yourself when you can be, like, why would you not take advantage of that when you could build a career off of that? I saw a TikTok the other day that was like, you know, the world's hard right now and any job, the job market is horrible. So I'm actually just going to start following my passions because why not? And start trying to. And he was like, and it was easier than I thought because I actually like what I'm doing and don't feel like it's like killing myself to work. And maybe that's our like next stage of rebellion is just like everybody's going to. And again, I'm glad that I can make money being creative and for my ideas. And like, I'm very grateful for that. But I'm also hoping like that's not my last career. Like I want to do something else. I don't know what that looks like.
Well, I think obviously finding the thing that you actually care about and continuing to do that thing is like the best thing, the best way things could end up. Like I think about this a lot with like, you know, AI is creating uncertainty. The tech market is creating uncertainty. Mm-hmm. There's like a ton of uncertainty. And so then it's like, well, how do you manage through it? It's like, well, if you know like who you like working with.
Yep.
And who you like spending your time with. And then you have like at least your values for how you go about doing the thing. Like you feel good about how you're doing it. It's a lot easier to keep doing the thing.
Yeah.
And it's a lot easier to get better at it. And you don't know exactly when things will hit, but at least if you have those pieces, it is much more possible to continue doing it. Cause like for me, I work with my best friend.
Exactly.
I love the people I work with every day. I feel like I do the best work of my career like every day. That's like basically how it feels. So I'm like, this doesn't feel hard. It's like, it's awesome.
Yeah.
But like, if you told me I had to go do this job for another company, I didn't have all those things, it would be devastating probably.
Yep.
So I do think it's like so much of it is about like finding your own fit of what actually makes you happy and what makes you fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And I just always come back to, it comes back to like who you work with and how you do it. And if you don't have to sacrifice on those things, it's easy to keep doing. And if you do, there's almost always going to be a timeline for how long it's possible to continue.
Yeah, because you're giving a piece of yourself away to do that.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, no, I want to keep.
Unfortunately, our society like values that too much.
Yes.
And correct. So a lot of folks get confused. And just like your friend who's like, I just started doing what I wanted to. And like, it's actually happened faster than I thought it would. And I think about that all the time.
Yeah. I had that experience myself. And people are like, how are you doing that? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just doing it. And I'm not worried about what next month looks like. I'm looking at next week.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also, you wake up when you were excited about it, you like have a ton of ideas. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, I can't do all my ideas. Mm-hmm. And if you're not excited, I was like, what am I going to do today? Like, it's a mentality shift, I feel like, that just, it changes your energy. It's like, also, how much energy do I have to spend on this? Like, well, actually, how much energy do I get from it?
Exactly.
If you get energy from what you do, you're golden. Yep. This is also something, I don't know why I'm like on the soapbox right now, but it's keep like, going. I feel like we've hit a nerve here. For me, which is also the thing of like a lot of stuff takes time. And then when it works, it can compound.
Yes.
But the only way you get all the value is if you actually compound it and you stick with it. And therefore, if you're doing something that doesn't give you energy or sucks or whatever, you're never going to get the chance to compound it. And if you find the thing that gives you energy that you're actually excited about, then it's easy to compound it. And the compounding is where you create most of the value usually.
Yeah. Yeah, I learned this and I've learned so many lessons like being solo, but my North Star is what gives me energy? What do I like to do? Because that's when the work is better from me too. And I feel better about that. The client feels better about that. And candidly, that can be stressful. At the beginning, I had about a month of runway and I was like, okay, like you need to make X amount of money. You need to make 10K out of the gate, like a month. Like that's like not nothing, you know?
Yeah.
I'm one girl. I live downtown Chicago. I pay, you know, my dog's not paying my bills. So I still have one client that I edit their blog posts because I just have so much historical knowledge now of like what's in their library that it's like second nature for me to do it. And I don't love to execute a lot of things like that because I'm moving more into this brand and content programs. I don't know. I'm making it up as I go, but so far it seems to be fine. So
that's awesome. That's great. It's very inspiring. Okay. We are going to go into the wild card segment of the show.
Okay.
So I'll list different marketing activities and you're going to tell me if you love it, you hate it, or you have like a quick gut reaction.
Okay.
Okay. Here's my list of things. Cold emails, still effective or totally dead?
I really want it to be effective, but right now I feel like the way that it's being done is not good.
AI generated content, game changer or overrated?
Somewhere in the middle. Again, depends on how you're doing it, but mostly not good.
B2B influencers, legit or just a trend?
I'm into it. I feel like people can get their bag if they're into it, and it makes sense for them.
Webinars, must have or a snooze fest?
Mostly snooze fest right now. It's kind of sad.
Big opportunity to differentiate there. Okay, yeah. Great. Little plug. Company blogs, still relevant or outdated?
I love a good blog. So If you're doing it the way that you should be doing it, then keep doing it.
Gated content.
Out. I'll forever have always been out on gated content.
Out on gated. Look, you didn't even. Okay. Yeah. Marketing awards. Valuable or just a vanity play?
Oh, I'm into it. Everybody should get a reward for something.
Corporate TikToks. Cringe or super cringe?
Super cringe. You didn't even give me a choice there.
Brand mascots. Fun differentiator or outdated gimmick?
Fun. Super fun.
Fun. And I know the answer to this, but we put it on the list, so I'm asking anyway. Personal brands for marketers? Essential or overhyped?
Essential, especially for marketers.
Perfect. Bridget, thank you so much for coming on the show. This is awesome. Should people go to LinkedIn to connect with you? Where should they connect with you to learn more?
Yeah, LinkedIn is probably the place. Our collective is currently getting our little website up, but we're called Creative Little Planets. So we have a LinkedIn as well.
Awesome. That's amazing. Awesome. Thank you so much. This is really fun.
Thank you.
You know, Bridget wasn't that unhinged on the show.
She was just the right amount of unhinged.
Just the right amount of hinged.
I'm glad that we talked so much about like finding your brand voice, whether that be a personal brand, whether that be a company's brand identity. And that is truly the reason why I reached out to Bridget. Like I was like scrolling on LinkedIn and I saw some of her posts about like who owns what part of a marketing process, but it was written in such a funny and compelling way. And I was like, let's get her on the show. Let's see.
Yeah. I think it is interesting too, because like she talks about this coming naturally to her and like being a copywriter and writing those jokes and putting the memes out there. And it doesn't come naturally to everybody. But I think one of the things that everyone can learn from Bridget, if you just go check out her LinkedIn, is like she said this in an interview, but she is legit having fun doing it, which makes it a lot easier to keep doing it, makes it a lot easier to try more stuff. And I do think like hosting a podcast, being on social, like it helps a lot if you are genuinely curious. And so I do think it's like, whether that's you or someone in your company or your friend or whatever, it's like there's probably somebody who's quite curious, someone who's quite willing to be outspoken, and just like putting them into the position to try this stuff tends to be what works.
Totally.
Anyway, that was a fun interview. Thank you, Bridget, for coming on. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Talking Too Loud. Please like and subscribe wherever you do consume the content. It helps us get the word out there. If you have anyone you think we should feature on the show or topics you want us to cover, don't forget you can always email us at talkingtooloud@wisi.com. And until next time, we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. Talking Too Loud is brought to you by Wistia, hosted by Chris Savage, produced by me, Sylvie Lubau, along with Adam Day. Executive produced by Wistia Studios. This episode was mixed by Maria Passingham. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, rate and review us wherever you listen. And check out more content from Wistia Studios at wistia.com.